Good evening. It's so good to be back here and see so many familiar faces and make some more connections and meet some new people as well. It's really good to be back with you all. If you would be making your way over to Hebrews chapter 11, we'll be having the majority of our study there this evening. Hebrews chapter 11. We'll be discussing the idea of faith, of living by faith, of God preserving the faithful, and those ideas. Faith, of course, is an important concept that appears throughout the Bible. God is faithful to His people, to His promises, to His covenant, and His people are expected to be faithful to Him and to the covenant they are a part of. And ultimately, the faithful will be rewarded and the unfaithful will be punished. Maybe not on this earth, but at least in the end, at least in judgment. And if you skip back a couple verses to Hebrews 10:38, it says, "My righteous one shall live by faith. And if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul." And so there we have the idea of the righteous living by faith, of the faithful being preserved. Let's move on to verse 1 of chapter 11. "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it the men of old gained approval." As many of you are probably aware, this chapter goes on to describe the stories of men from the Old Testament who are faithful to God, who displayed great acts of faith by living by faith. People such as Abel and Noah and Moses and many others. And as it describes those individuals, there are characteristics that they all share, that they're all faithful, that they all share. And there's a part of it that culminates in verses 13 through 16, and that's the next passage we will read. And as we're reading that, be looking for characteristics in that passage that these faithful, that these righteous individuals share. So Hebrews 11 verse 13. It says, "All these died in faith, without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they have been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them." Now, I'd just like to share a few characteristics that I found in this passage as we think about the righteous, as we think about the faithful individuals. And the first one, look at verse 13. It says, "All these died in faith." So these faithful people are steadfast in their beliefs. They're immovable. Their convictions are unchanging, even to the end, even unto death. But not only are they steadfast, look further on in verse 13. It says, "Without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance." These individuals are also hopeful in the Lord, trusting in the Lord. Their hope is beyond here. They have a different perspective than those around them. And they keep looking forward, keep looking beyond. And further on, in verse 13 and getting into verse 14, it says, "Having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth, they were seeking a country of their own." So these individuals are steadfast, and they're trusting in the Lord, but they're also aliens, they're exiles, they're strangers. They understood their situation on this earth, that they didn't belong here, that they weren't content here, but they had somewhere else to be. They also understood who they were, that they didn't belong to this world, but that they belonged to God. Their identity aligned with God. In verse 15, it says, "If they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. but they desire a better country that is a heavenly one. And so these individuals are focused. They're spiritually minded. They're undistracted. They're not dwelling on this world's pleasures, but they're remaining focused on God. They're seeking the heavenly things, the things above, not below. They're seeking the godly things, not the physical. These individuals are steadfast, trusting, aliens, and focused. And finally, look at verse 16. God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. These individuals are preserved. Preserved through God's generosity, His grace, His mercy, His love. He will not forget them. He's not ashamed to be their God. He'll reward His faithful servants. And with all these things in mind, we could look at so many different characters in this chapter or throughout the Old Testament or even the New Testament. But one in particular that I would like us to examine tonight is the character Abraham. And Abraham is a major character in the Bible, of course, but particularly in this chapter. In this section that we just read, Abraham actually surrounds this section. Part of his story is told beginning in verse 8 and following, and it picks back up after this section in verse 17 through 19. And as many of us are aware, he's a great example of living by faith. He's well known, well recognized, but certainly would not hurt for us to refresh our minds of his great faith, of his story, of his example. And so let's examine him and see what we can glean from him, from his life, from his faith, from his walk with God, from his story. And so go back a few verses in chapter 11 to verse 8. Hebrews 11, verse 8. And it reads, "By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God." An initial thing I would point out is just simply Abraham was called. And we see that at the beginning of verse 8. And in the Genesis narrative of Abraham, the Lord calls Abraham and tells him to go forth from your country. And in the verse following that, and here in Hebrews 11, Abraham obeys that call. And actually in Genesis 12, in 4 through 6, it talks about how Abram went forth just as the Lord had commanded him, had spoken to him, and he does that despite not knowing where he's going. He does that despite his vast possessions, all the servants he has, his family. He's going to move all that because the Lord told him to. He called him to. He obeyed by putting his faith in God and in His promises. And it goes on to say that Abraham lived as an alien in a foreign land. And answering God's call, it required Abram to become an alien. What do I mean by that? Well, before this call, Abram was content. He was at home, or at least so he thought. He was not in a strange and foreign land until he had obeyed God's call. After God's call is when he became an exile. It's when he was out of place in this world. And despite all that, he held to the promises of God and stayed true to Him despite his circumstances. In Genesis 12 and 7 through 8, it talks about how despite Abram being surrounded by Canaanites, despite him being in a foreign land, he still worships God. He builds an altar for Him and calls upon His name. He still is a follower of God. So Abram was called. But in being a follower of God, Abraham would also be tested. And there are many examples that we could point to of this, but perhaps the most recognizable would be the one found in chapter 22 of Genesis. So if you would, be turning over there, and we'll read a few passages there. Genesis 22, beginning in verse 1. Now it came about after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham. He said, Here I am. He said, Take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you. Let's pause there. Do you realize what God is asking here? That he's asking Abraham to sacrifice, to slay his own son? It almost appears to be like some pagan practice that we would read about. How could God expect Abraham to follow through with this request? This, of course, is a difficult thing to ask of anyone, but in particular, this was not just a son, but this was Abraham's only begotten son, the son whom he loved, the miraculous son for Sarah, the son Abraham had been waiting so long for, the son through which the descendants were to come through to make Abraham the father of nations, the son of promise. Just a few chapters earlier, in chapter 17, God promises a son by Sarah to Abraham. Abraham asks about Ishmael. Could he not be the heir? Could he not be the son of promise? But God says no. It's going to be Isaac by Sarah. He will be the son of promise. And then just a few chapters later, when we read here, that's the very son that God asked to be sacrificed. Why did it have to be Isaac, the only begotten son? Why could it not be Ishmael? As bad as that would be, why could it not be him or some other servant? Why Isaac? Why not some other way? But this was the ultimate test of faith. Abraham had to obey God or not to obey God. There wasn't an in-between. And so how does he respond to this test? Pick up in verse 3. Chapter 22. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son. And he split wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. And Abraham and Isaac will continue on their journey. And in verse 7, Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, My father, and he said, Here I am, my son. And he said, Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. So the two of them walked on together. And then they came to the place of which God had told him. And Abraham built the altar there and arranged the wood and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Let's pause there. So we see Abraham obeyed God's test. But not only did he obey God's test, look back at verse 3. It says, Abraham rose early in the morning. Abraham acts immediately to obey God. Abraham doesn't wait around or procrastinate, try to get out of this test. He doesn't run away or quit on God. He simply obeys God. Because he doesn't take God's commands, God's words lightly. But instead he rises up early in the morning to go do this task. And it highlights his obedience to God. His dedication to God and God's will. And certainly that could be a lesson for us in obedience and not procrastinating as well. But moving on, Abraham obeyed to please God, despite it being his only son, the one whom he loved, the son of promise, the one which the descendants were to come through. And so how could he do this? Keep your place in Genesis, but look back over at Hebrews 11. And we'll look at the second part of Abraham's story in Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11, verse 17. So how was Abraham able to do this test? Verse 17, by faith. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, "And Isaac your descendant shall be called." He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. And so Abraham was able to do this because of his faith. By his faith, he could obey God because he trusted in God and in God's promises. He knew the Lord would provide for him. We specifically see that in Genesis 22:8. He says, "The Lord will provide." He knew the Lord would provide to fulfill his promises. He considered that God could raise Isaac from the dead because God would keep his promise. God was faithful to his covenant. God was faithful to his promises. And so that meant God could do the miraculous. God could do what had not been done before. So we see Abraham's faith was steadfast. It was immovable. He was certainly going to obey God. He was trusting in the Lord, hopeful in the promises of the Lord, that he would deliver and provide. And his faith, he's in exile because Abraham understood his identity. He understood he was God's. Everything that he had belonged to God. And certainly he had a different perspective than others around him. And Abraham was focused to simply serve and please God. He was just a servant of God to do God's will and not his own. And there was a preservation of life. Abraham was rewarded with God because God provided life. And so we see from this story what an amazing testament of faith the story is. What a great example. And someone here might be feeling intimidated by such a faithful individual, thinking that I could never reach these heights of faith. But do not be discouraged. This walk of faith is a journey. It takes time, trials, experiences to grow deeper faith. Abraham had to grow tremendously to reach this level of faith. He messed up many times, such as in Genesis 12, Genesis 20, and several other places, before he could attain the faith displayed in chapter 22. He kept the course and grew. He developed his faith. And we saw where he ended up. Let's just take a brief moment to look at him earlier on to see how he grew in his faith. Genesis 17, verse 15. Abraham grew in his faith. Genesis 17, verse 15. "Then God said to Abraham, 'As for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. I will bless her, and indeed I will give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her.' Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said in his heart, 'Will a child be born to a man 100 years old? And will Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child?'" And so we see Abraham laughed at God's promise, and we saw more of the end result in Hebrews 11:19, that he considered that God was able to raise Isaac from the dead to keep his promises. Did you see that growth there? In Genesis 17, Abraham laughed at God's promise that his old barren wife would have a child. But in Hebrews, Abraham's faith had grown so much. So much so that he believed in something even more incredible. Something that had not been done before. But that he could actually raise somebody from the dead. Abraham finally believed that the Lord would provide life. And so once again, what a testament to his growth, to his maturity. And as we mentioned, Abraham had other failures and shortcomings, but look where he ended up. He grew in faith. It's a walk. It's a journey. Remember, it's a journey. Recall the lyrics from "Each Step I Take." It says, "Each step I take, I know that He will guide me." God is right there with us. He's a part of the process of us growing in our faith. It takes time experience dedication to God and simply God to grow deeper faith. And for that faith, Abraham was rewarded. The Lord provided life. Back in chapter 22, in verse 11, we broke off at verse 10. The angel of the Lord tells him, stop. We know you have faith in God. You're obedient to God. And so Abraham received his only begotten son back from the dead as a type. And the Lord, as I mentioned before, provided life to fulfill his promises. And so we see that Abraham was called. He was tested. He was rewarded with the Lord providing life. Look at verse 18 of Genesis 22. In your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. Abraham is certainly an excellent example of faith, a foreshadowing of the faith that Jesus would have. Abraham has been called the father of faith, but Jesus is the author and perfecter of faith. Through Abraham's seed, all of the nations of the earth will be blessed. That blessing is Jesus. All the nations of the earth will be blessed by Jesus. Turn back to Hebrews now. Look at chapter 12. Hebrews 12. Look at verse 2. Hebrews 12, verse 2. And it says, Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despised the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. In a similar sense, as Abraham was called, Jesus was also called. Jesus had a purpose on this earth. He had a calling from God. Jesus' purpose was to be a servant, was to be the Savior of mankind, to be the ultimate sacrifice for all humans. Mark 10:45 says, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. And Jesus certainly obeyed this calling and became an alien in exile on this earth. He's the ultimate definition of a foreigner. For he was perfect in an imperfect world. Yet he remained sinless and faithful to the Father, even though he was tested, and he was tempted by the devil and other individuals as well. But he remained perfect. He remained obedient to God, even to death on a cross. Abraham was asked to sacrifice his son, but Jesus had to self-sacrifice. Like Abraham, Jesus was willing to do this sacrifice to please and obey God. It wasn't easy, but Jesus looked beyond. He knew that the Lord would provide life. And another thought is, God did not ask Abraham to do something in chapter 22 that he himself was not willing to do. Jesus going to the cross, in this action, God too was giving up his only begotten son to be sacrificed. By faith, Jesus was preserved. He was rewarded with life. Jesus died, but he raised from the dead. Once again, the Lord provided life. Jesus brought salvation and is back at the right hand of the throne of God. And Jesus is the definition of faith. Recall the characteristics that we examined earlier on. Jesus was steadfast to death. He was hopeful to the beyond, trusting in God. He was the ultimate alien, an exile on this earth. Understood he wasn't from here. He was focused on his purpose on this earth, constantly thinking of spiritual and godly things. And he was preserved, he was rewarded for his faith, for his obedience to the Lord. He's our ultimate example. All the other examples in Hebrews 11 and throughout the Bible of faith simply foreshadow Jesus. He fulfills those. Look back at Hebrews 12, verse 1. Hebrews 12, verse 1. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, Let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despised the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. He's our example, and we are to fix our eyes on him. Recall Genesis 22:18. Certainly Jesus is the fulfillment of that. He's the blessing to all nations. He died for us. He raised from the dead. He brought salvation. He's the author and perfecter of faith. He's the blessing to all nations. Just as we sang about a minute ago, he's the victory. He's brought us victory. Like Abraham and Jesus, we too have been called. We have a race ahead of us, as we see in this passage, and we are expected to obey this calling. We used to be in darkness, but in answering God's call, we have become exiles in this world. We gotta continue to identify with God and not the world. We must hold to God's promises, because there are gonna be trials, there are gonna be tests and temptations, but we gotta remain focused. How will we respond to such things? Hopefully by faith. There will be unpleasant things for us here, difficult things for us here that God might ask of us. But we gotta remember, we're not the first to endure such things. Abraham was asked to sacrifice his only begotten son, and Jesus to die cruelly on a cross, and so many other things in Hebrews 11 and throughout the rest of the Bible. We must respond like they did. With faith. We must look forward. We must run with endurance. We must fix our eyes on Jesus. Having faith and obedience through trials will simply cause deeper faith. We must remember that this world is not our home. This world is full of disappointment, dissatisfaction, inequality, injustice, sickness, pain, death, suffering. And I would suggest that all these things point to heaven. I would suggest that everybody is looking for heaven, whether they want to admit it or not. And what I mean by that is, people are searching for satisfaction, for fulfillment on this earth, for equality, for justice on this earth, to not have any more suffering, any more pain, any more death on this earth. But they're looking in the wrong place. Heaven is where they are looking for, but they don't want that. They don't want to obey. Perfections of heaven here. But that won't happen. This world is evil. It's corrupt. It's impure. It's imperfect. But heaven is perfect because God is there. We will be rewarded by being with God eternally if we are found faithful. Once again, the Lord will provide life, eternal life. Remember how the Lord provided for Abraham, provided for Jesus and so many others. And he's provided a lot for us already as well. Isaac was received back. Jesus was raised from the dead. We were dead in our trespasses, in our sins, and yet the Lord provides life. Heaven is perfect where this world is imperfect. While there may be disappointment, dissatisfaction here, there's fulfillment, contentment, satisfaction in heaven. What I mean by that is, people are not satisfied with this earth, not for long. They are looking for the new thing, something else to try to satisfy them. But heaven is the ultimate reward, the ultimate prize. We will be content, we will be satisfied, overjoyed once we're with God. And while there is inequality, injustice here, heaven will be different. Heaven's offered to all, not just a few, not just the rich, not just a certain race, but to all. And it's free because it was paid for already with Jesus' blood. It is perfect while this world is so imperfect. And while there's sickness and pain and tears and death here that people want to get rid of, there's no more of that in heaven. But in heaven, God is there. He's the ultimate comforter. If we're found faithful, we will be in heaven with Him for eternity. And this is the dwelling place we should be seeking, God's presence, that heavenly country. And maybe we have been growing too content, getting too satisfied with this world. Maybe we've lost our focus. And all these imperfections of this earth and many more that we didn't discuss are simply reminders to us that this world is not our home. That we need to renew our focus. That this world's imperfect and that we shouldn't get attached. But that we need to renew our focus on God, on our walk with God, and on our journey to dwell with Him. One last passage before we conclude. Turn over to 1 John 2. 1 John 2, verse 15. 1 John 2, 15. Do not love the world nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. The world is passing away, and also its lust. But the one who does the will of God lives forever. The one who does the will of God lives forever. As we've seen, God is faithful to His promises, to His covenant. Life will be provided. Life was provided to Abraham and to Jesus. It will be provided to us as well if we are faithful. Consider these words. This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. The angels beckon me from heaven's open door. I can't feel at home in this world anymore. We too have been called, just as Abraham and Jesus were called, called to be God's holy people, distinct from the world, exiles. We will be tempted and tested like them if we haven't been already. But we must press on to heaven. We must seek God. We must fix our eyes on Jesus. And continually grow to be more and more like Him, laying aside the weights of this world so that we can run with endurance. We must be steadfast and hopeful. Recognize that we are the Lord's and not the world's. Recognize that we are exiles. We must be focused on serving the Lord, doing His will. If we are faithful, we can have great hope in His promises. And so maybe you do not have that hope of heaven within you. Maybe you think this world is your home. Perhaps you're still in darkness. That can be changed. We have a calling to serve God. Will you obey that calling? Abraham obeyed. Jesus ultimately obeyed unto death. If you have not obeyed, you need to put to death the old man and put on the new man. Put on Christ. This world is passing away. If judgment occurred this evening, where would you be going? If you need to turn your life over to Christ, or come back to Christ, or have any other spiritual need, such as prayers to the congregation, please make that known as we stand, as we sing.